is Icon Art Radio. It's me, Bill Teeple, Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby. And we're here broadcasting from Icon Gallery in the Cultural District in downtown Fairfield, Iowa. Our guest today is Sonia Gunderson. We could do five shows with you, Sonia, I think. You're such an interesting person. You've done such interesting things. We want to emphasize what's at hand, though. Well, first, let me say, you spent how long? 9 months?
Ten months.
10 months living with the Inuit people in Canada, which we want to hear more about. But there's a group of filmmakers that are in this town that you stayed in, and they're really quite well known for what they do, and they've come up with a new film that she has gotten from the film, from the distributors, or whoever in charge of allowing this film out into the world, has allowed you the opportunity to show it in the Midwest premiere here in Fairfield at Icon Gallery on the 27th and 28th of February. So I don't know where you want to start. You can start anywhere you want and tell us a little bit about these people, as filmmakers, and what the film is about.
Actually, I had an experience of watching the first feature film that was made by Zacharias Kunuk, this Inuit film director from Igloolik. I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan at the Grand Old Michigan Theater and happened to see this film. And I remember almost not breathing for 3 hours as this film was being shown, because it was so magnificent, just the photography and the sense that one had of being really thrust into the center of Inuit culture. And I remember being there with my mother and my sister, and we just couldn't move afterward. And it was a couple of years after I'd taken my first trip up to the Arctic, traveled around to 5 different communities up on Baffin Island. This is all in the Canadian High Arctic. And came back fascinated with Inuit culture and started studying, learning everything I could. So seeing this film, you know, there was a little bit of experience and knowledge that I was bringing to it, but not a lot. And a couple of years later, I had a chance to interview Zach Kunuk when he was in Ottawa for an arts festival. And I became quite interested in the way that he described, you know, his whole filmmaking process, because I'd seen the product, but I had no idea what went into making it so special. And everything that he described flew in the face of the way that we're used to Hollywood films being made. You know, these celebrities that come in have, you know, a lot of fuss made over them, huge studios, lots of money, lavish productions. This first film, and it's true of the film that's coming here to Fairfield, it was made by people in the community. Zacharias Kunuk is a self-educated filmmaker. And, you know, he's not really laden with a lot of the sort of expectations that a lot of filmmakers have. And so he just integrated this into the whole culture. And on the set, the way that he described it, everybody worked together. It wasn't like they were sort of big name stars coming through. First, he would start by meeting with elders in the community to sort of talk about a story idea. And then together they would refine that. And then he and his partner would go off and write a script, and they would bring it back to the to the elders in the community to make sure that it was authentic in terms of the culture. And really, the way that he looks at filmmaking in his culture, it's an extension of the oral tradition. Mm-hmm. They never had a written language until, you know, less than 100 years ago, and so forth. So he just sees it as an extension of the storytelling tradition within the culture. So he just took people within the community selected people as actors for The Fast Runner. And some of the same people that are in the film that's coming here before tomorrow were in that first film. So in any case, I got quite interested in the whole process that they went through. He described how on the set they made a big deal about just sort of going with Inuit rhythms, not having a rigid production schedule, but just allowing, doing everything they could, whether it was allowing the camera to run for a long period of time so that there could be many takes and that kind of thing, to just, you know, starting when the actors woke up in the morning and that kind of thing, very relaxed. And he said that really plays into the quality of the performance. If you take Inuit and you start kind of trying to regiment them, it makes them tense, and that spills over into the performance. So I was quite interested in his whole approach as well as the final product. And after I interviewed him and published an article in an art magazine about his work, he invited me to come up the next time they were making a feature film and be there, sort of see how it was done. So that was how I actually started this relationship with this community of Igloolik, which is a small island up off of Baffin Island. It's about 200 miles above the Arctic Circle. So in 2005, which was so 5 years after my first trip to the Arctic, I flew up there and actually camped with the cast and crew out on the land as they were shooting the second feature film. And so that led to this longer relationship with the community, and I've been back, I think, four more times after that, and got to know this group of women who made Before Tomorrow, and this is their first feature film. And it's having the kind of success that Zach Kunuk's first feature had, which is every film festival it goes to, people are just amazed by, you know, what these women were able to produce. It's just incredible, working together, filming on the land over a 2-year period.
That is so inspiring. I can't wait to see it. There was
over 1,000 films submitted for international film with the Sundance Festival,
yeah.
And they were included as one of the 16, is that correct?
That's right, in the drama category.
We're not talking about just some backyard movie here. This is a major independently made film.
That's right. And it's also won major awards. It won the Best First Feature Film Award at the Toronto Film Festival and other festivals that it's gone to. It's won all kinds of awards. It was really fun for me to be in the community last year. That was the time when I was there for 10 months, and see the film shown for the first time to the community and to the women who had made it. This is a women's video collective that's based up there, and they've been working together since 1991 in conjunction with a French-Canadian filmmaker whose name is Marie-Hélène Cousineau. She's based in Montreal, but has lived up in Igloolik off and on over that period. And she realized that the films that Zach Kunuk was making up there emphasized more the male perspective on living in that culture. And so she got a group of women together and said, you know, you have so much knowledge, we should group together here and start to bring that knowledge out. So they started with really kind of simple things. I mean, just interviewing each other, telling stories, showing how to scrape caribou skins and seal skins, how to light a kudlik, which is a seal oil lamp. So they started out quite simply and started, you know, not only displaying the knowledge, cultural knowledge that they had, but also learning about the technology of filmmaking and that kind of thing. And it's been interesting to see those women develop over the years. So to do a full feature-length film like this was a huge thing for them to do, and they rose to all the challenges. There were so many challenges that they faced in making this film. But then to see the final product and to see them, you know, if you saw them in the grocery store in a Glulik or something, they just, you know, Madeleine Evelou, who's the star of the film, just wonderful woman. You know, she's about 4'10". I mean, you know, you might not even notice her. But on screen, she is just incredibly powerful.
Wow.
So much beauty and character in that face.
So is the film, it sounds like it's not a documentary, it's an actual fictionalized story.
It's based on a 19th century novel, is that correct?
That's right. It's based on a Danish novel. It was by Jørn Riel. It's called Den Morgendagen, which means Before Tomorrow. And it's a story that was actually originally set in Greenland in the 1860s. Greenland had outsiders coming in earlier than many parts of the Canadian Arctic did. And so really the story is about how the local Inuit in Greenland were affected by this arrival of outsiders. And there are many stories, and this is true of other indigenous peoples too, who've lived isolated lives. And when outsiders come in, they bring diseases and, you know, all kinds of things, as well as modern implements and values and agendas and that kind of thing. But this is quite different than what they've done before, because everything they had done up to this point was really based on Inuit culture in Igloolik, as even separate from Inuit culture in other parts of Canada. So here was a story that originated in Greenland. Marie-Hélène Cousineau had read the book and just fell in love with the poetry of it. And to her, it was just a beautiful story. So she presented the idea to the women, and they could totally relate to it because it was very true to their own experience, having lived nomadic lifestyles on the land and so forth. So they just went for it and, you know, adapted it to their region. Then they ended up having to adapt it again because they actually, for funding purposes, had to move the production further south.
Yeah, I read about that. Let me just say for the people who have tuned in after we began this show that we're interviewing Sonia Gunderson, who is showing a film that's been on the independent film circuit on the 27th and the 28th, two evening performances and a matinee at Icon Gallery here in Fairfield. And prior to that, for those who want more background on her experience with the Inuit people, she will be giving a lecture at the library at 2:00 in the afternoon, Sunday the 22nd.
Go. And that lecture is free.
That's free.
And then the film is actually being shown as a benefit for Icon.
Yes, and we
Icon is such a rare jewel in our community, and it's thrilling to be able to do something that not only enriches the community with a Midwest premiere of a wonderful film, but supports the great work that Bill and Janet are doing at Icon.
Well, thank you. And we definitely appreciate you're putting on the benefit for us and doing it with our gallery. Thank you very much.
So what took you to this part of the world originally? What was the first spark that made you want to go there?
That's a hard question to answer. It was just one of those sort of instances of serendipity. Where I met someone. I've always been a nature lover, an art lover, a culture lover, and loved traveling, and happened to meet someone who was actually a canoe guide who had been all over the world, and he told me about a wonderful river up on Baffin Island that he felt was the most beautiful place he'd ever been, and one of the most sort of wild places, a glacial river up there called the Soper River. So I checked my frequent flyer mileage and found miracle of miracles that I could actually get up there for 25,000 miles. And so I really initially went up there just to go on this 10-day canoe trip with a group of people, and then thinking that I would never ever get back to that region, scheduled an extra month of travel to go around and meet some Inuit artists and camp in some national parks and so forth. So, you know, I really thought it was a one-shot trip, but by the end I was totally in love with the land and with the people. It's just an extraordinary place. So beautiful. And, you know, I was up there initially in the summertime for about 5 or 6 weeks. And this past year, so it was, would have been, I think, my fifth trip to the region, was the first time I was there through the whole winter and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
And actually lived with local people. So it was a very different experience because I've been going up there on magazine assignments to do particular stories, and whenever you come in with an agenda like that, your focus is pretty sharp. But to be there just living, you know, with an Inuit family and sort of really becoming part of the rhythm of the community, it was a whole different experience.
So did they welcome you warmly from the very beginning, or did it take you a while to sort of be trusted by the people and warmed up to, or how did that happen?
I was really lucky because the family that I lived with, I'd gotten to know over two previous visits. Actually, who I call my Inuit father, the father in this family, is quite a well-known artist, so I'd written a profile about him. He's also a very well-known hunter and guide, and so I, another time, wrote a story about him and two other Inuit guides who were working with Will Steger, who's a polar explorer that was doing this big expedition up there and so forth. So I'd gotten to know them a little bit through that. The father, his name is Lukey, is a very shy person, you know, and doesn't speak English. He speaks Inuktitut, and I don't speak Inuktitut except for a few words. So always I would interview him through translators and that kind of thing. But even if he's talking to somebody in his family, he's a very reserved, shy person. His wife, on the other hand, is very ebullient, you know, very friendly. Although I found being up there for a longer period of time, she's kind of very up and down. So sometimes she would be very, very friendly and outgoing, and other times quite the opposite. But in any case, I think because of that connection, because I'd been up there a few times, you know, each time I would come after the first time, starting from the moment I stepped off the plane, people would say, "Oh, you're back." You know, and so forth. So I think it means something when people do come back. Yeah. The other thing that was fortunate was that some of the publications I was writing for, like this In Flight magazine, local people would actually see those articles and see that their community was being featured, and as much as possible from their perspective. And so I think that made the whole thing much easier. Mm. They actually had to approve. I was up there on a research grant, and the Inuit, for various reasons, because they've had bad experiences with outsiders coming in the last 10 years or so, they've really seized control of who gets to come in and do research there and so forth. So it took 4 months of jumping through a lot of different hoops at the national and regional and local levels to actually get a permit to do the research that I was up there to do this last year. And I was pretty nervous about whether that permission would come through. But when I spoke to the mayor of, this is a very small place, it's, you know, less than 1,600 people. But when I spoke to the mayor, whom I'd interviewed for other things, and I said, "What's your process here of approving people to come in, and do I have a chance?" He said, "Oh, absolutely, you know, there's no problem with you." So I took that to mean that I think, you know, people have been pretty supportive of what I've been doing. But even so, you're still always an outsider.
You were glad when the approval finally officially came.
Very relieved.
So this, the grant you were on, was this a Fulbright?
Yeah.
And what type of research, are you planning a book or?
Yeah, it was actually looking at what Igloolik, this Inuit community, is doing to try to preserve its cultural integrity. Igloolik, like other Inuit communities, has really suffered from a number of different pressures. I mean, the colonization, you know, missionaries, police, traders, whalers, all these different groups coming in and trying to kind of assimilate them into mainstream culture and so forth. And so they've really resisted. And Zacharias Kunuk, this filmmaker who is a co-producer of the film that's coming to Fairfield, has been instrumental in this. Igloolik is the only community in the Arctic that did not accept satellite television when it was offered to them. They actually voted it down twice. And they knew, based on what they had seen in other communities, that as soon as you get TV coming in, you're getting all kinds of outside cultural values being imposed on you and lifestyles and so forth. And so they really didn't want to lose what they had. So they decided until there was cultural programming that was appropriate for the community, they wouldn't accept television in the community. So it's unheard of. And so Zach Kunuk was really one of the people that started producing that cultural programming, and now television's in the community. Unfortunately, all the other stuff on TV is in the community as well, and so you know, you see the influence of that every place. When I was actually staying with my Inuit family one night, they invited me in to watch TV with them, and they said, "Oh, you have to see our favorite TV show." And I said, "Oh, what's your favorite show?" And they said, "Dog the Bounty Hunter." which is a pretty wild show, you know. So, although afterward I thought, well, it's actually got two of their favorite words in it, which is dog and hunter, you know. It's still very much a hunting culture up there. Mm.
So do you speak the language now after being there? Or is
I wish I did. Mm. It's a very, very difficult language. It's not at all parallel to our language, like the European languages would be and so forth. And several of us who were very interested in the culture last year were trying to get some kind of training and just were not able to pull it off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure that my understanding and knowledge would be so much deeper if I did speak the language.
So how did you always have a translator with you? How did you communicate with the people out for all those months?
Well, the people who are, let's say, under the age of 50, for the most part, can speak English. They may choose mm-hmm. not to. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're going around in the community, everybody speaks Inuktitut. Mm-hmm. But so in my family, my Inuit mother, was bilingual. Oh. Her husband was unilingual. And then all the kids spoke some English. Mm-hmm. I mean, not necessarily, you know, fluid conversations that we had, but we certainly understood each other. And but I know that I was missing a great deal. Just in terms of something like, you know, the huge conduit in terms of conversation within the community, and the Inuit are very, very social people, is community radio. So for about 6 hours a day, everybody in the community is listening to the radio, and there'll be some discussion, you know, do you know beluga whales are in the bay today? Or did you hear about so-and-so being sick? Or I have a parka to sell, or gossip of all different kinds, you know, and so forth. So it's just like a huge community conversation, and my Inuit mother was one of the most dominant in terms of those conversations. So 10 times a day, the phone would, you know, fly off the hook, and she'd be talking about something on the radio. And so I started to, I don't know how, but I started to be able to kind of pick things up, you know, that were going on in the community. And at one point she said, "Oh, you're getting too good. We can't have private conversations anymore."
My son, Dane, who lives in Chicago, does a radio show for KRUU that's on Saturday mornings. And he had a few shows ago, he featured Inuit throat singing.
Oh.
He had stumbled upon some CD, and it just completely enamored, you know, he was completely enamored of it. And he had read a book about it. And so he told a lot of the story about how two women would sing like with their mouths very close together so that the other person's mouth cavity formed a resonant chamber for their voice. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Or was throat singing is a very big thing up there, and there's kind of a renewed interest in it among youth there because it's something that their grandparents and great-grandparents did, particularly during the long winters there. You know, there's a period where the sun disappears. And how long it disappears depends on which part of the Arctic you're in, but where I was, it disappears for 7 weeks. So traditionally, as they lived this nomadic lifestyle, and they would be in igloos often during the winter, they would play all kinds of games. And so one of those games is throat singing, which typically involves two women facing each other and then making different sounds and kind of mirroring each other's sounds. I'll try to bring some recording on Sunday to my talk.
Sounds
so
good.
People can hear that.
So we should remind everyone the talk, Sonia will be giving a talk at the library, Fairfield Public Library, Sunday, February 22nd, 2 p.m., and then showing this film by these Inuit women filmmakers at Icon Gallery on the 27th and 28th of February, Friday night, Saturday matinee, and Saturday evening, 8 o'clock, is that right?
7:45.
Okay, on the evenings,
right.
And
2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday.
Sonia Gunderson, we've been talking with fascinating.
Thank you so much.
Stories.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.